Dan Wilkin is going to join us at 1:25. We'll talk to him about college football playoffs coming to a conclusion very soon. Thoughts on Indiana and Ole Miss and a lot more. But there is a story in college football that I think a lot of people are probably going to be watching closely, both in basketball and football. The young man's name is Damon Williams Jr., and he spent last year at Washington, at quarterback at Washington, and he signed a contract. That's the new thing now, is you sign deals. That's what Trinidad Chambliss signed, right, to go back to Ole Miss if he gets eligibility. These deals. Everybody's announcing that I signed a new deal. Brennan Soaresby at LSU deal. Damon Williams signed a contract to return back to Seattle for his junior year. But late last night, he announced that he would, in fact, be entering the transfer portal. Again, this is after he signed a contract with the Washington Huskies. now, I guess, is it presumed that he would go to LSU? I don't know where that maybe came up, but LSU just signed, or that was Texas Tech, excuse me. They just signed Soaresby at Texas Tech. I said LSU. I meant Texas Tech. I guess LSU was one of the schools that was rumored or mentioned or whatever. And Washington's stance on this is that they have absolutely no intention of releasing him out of the contract that he signed on January the 2nd. That's according to The Athletic. And now we're going to find out what their legal ramifications are, what their legal, you know, standing is here. We know about the Georgia situation with the Damon Wilson II, the defensive end who left for Missouri. They are seeking $390,000 from Damon Wilson, even though they only paid him like $30,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they want $390,000 because I guess he signed a deal, you know, for that. Williams, I guess the LSU connection here is that Williams committed to Ole Miss when Lane Kiffin was there in late 2022.
Yep.
Ended up, you know, at Washington, but maybe that's the connection there, and LSU needs a quarterback and all that. So, anyway, we shall see, you know, what Washington's legal standing is here, but I do kind of find it impossible, right? I mean, this is amateur sports. How are you going to enforce a contract of someone who is not an employee?
Well, you know how there used to be the difference that we'd write about between verbal commitment and signing.
The letter of intent.
For NIL and all
yes.
that stuff. And it seems like that
school would have to let you out of that.
It seems like, you know, dad here, the kid, you're trying to apply that old school sort of it doesn't count. It
yep.
was non-binding to what in a time that this has all become professional athletics.
Yep.
I know we don't have a CBA, but we are running a professional system here for college athletics. If you haven't noticed, John just told you they're signing deals. That's what we talk about with the professional sports. And so that what they've got to learn is once you sign these things, there's no more going out and negotiating. It's just like with professional sports. I mean, you know, you mentioned Lamar, who the Ravens eventually, you know, signed or whatever. You signed that deal. He can't go out and negotiate with other teams and everything else once that's done. And so I would imagine once you're in the courts now, how long it would go on, this fight, you know, whether it's worth it for the schools themselves with the money they'll spend to try to enforce these things, that's a whole other conversation. But I do think, and we talked about in the Georgia situation, you have to put your foot down. Otherwise, the next guy's going to try to do this to you. Or, you know, get you to one point and then go use that to, you know, as leverage to go get another deal at some point. And this is another reason why you need a commissioner. You know, these kinds of whatever it is here, there has to be more control, more guardrails. Somebody, you know, watching this. Apparently, John, there was, because Big Ten's all mad, they were vocal last year. I don't think you brought up Xavier Lucas's transfer from Wisconsin to Miami, supporting the Badgers and trying to enforce the defensive backs contract with that team. I don't know how they did in terms of trying to enforce it. But my point is this is happening everywhere. Somebody's got to get a hold of it. There's no commissioner. And you're telling me it's going to be left up to these judges, and that could go on for a while. Just it's messy. But clearly, you know, it's not just us that we've talked about, boy, you got to catch up. This is professional athletics now. There is no more loyalty. Apparently, so, you know, some of these folks that are signing deals got to understand, bro, this is binding.
Yep.
This sounds like a verbal commitment that you just made to Washington. So.
Yep.
I support Washington and his efforts. You had him signed to a deal.
Yep.
You. That's what contracts are. And so, but how, you know, whether it's worth it in the end and how long this could go on, I don't know if it will be.
Yeah.
Worth it.
I don't know. I think, you know, people will be watching it closely. I do think that this is a, you know, he's entering a do not contact with a do not contact tag. So he obviously knows where he's going. You know, LSU, Miami, Oregon, those are the schools that everybody seems to
be. The deal he got with Washington was already top of the market, according to Thamel. So there can only be a couple that are offering top. And I guess that's what he's trying to go back and get. But you cannot do that legally once you've signed that binding contract.
Yeah, I mean, I get why people hate college sports today. So, I mean, because
I understand why you roll your eyes at it.
Even when you sign a contract professionally, you are bound.
Yeah.
You know, you're not getting out of it unless there's like a buyout. So I do think that's the part of this that's like, it is professional sports, but it's like, yeah, at the same time, it's not. Because it's like these kids are, and look, I mean, you could make the argument that they should, but they're getting the best of both worlds in that they're getting professional money,
mm-hmm.
but they're not getting professional level enforcement. Because the NCAA is, I don't know what they're trying to pretend that they are. You know, but they don't have a CBA. They don't have anything, you know, that they can say that would stop it.
It can enforce nothing.
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, you're getting the best of both worlds here. If you're the student, I mean, this is the best time ever to be a college athlete. No question about it. Because you can do things like this. You can even sign a deal and still 2 days later say, I got a better offer. I got a better school. I got a bit whatever. And there's nothing legally, I feel, that the school will be able to do. Now, maybe you could pay some early termination, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the language is in the contract.
There's got to be some way at some point where that kid's ineligible at the school he's trying to get to with that money because he has a signed deal. I just think at some point a court of law is going to have to decide that.
Right, right.
But getting to that point
could take years.
Who knows how long?
No, it could take a decade. It could take, you know, yes, there is like, if the NIL go, if like the, it depends on how the money is, like whatever, the deal. So if the deal is funneled through, you know, some entity that's not approved by NIL Go, you will then be deemed ineligible. Now, we haven't seen that yet, mm-hmm. but that would be the only route. It's like, oh, well, it's not my NIL is not approved at this place, so I got to go back to that place. I'm ineligible there, so I stay, you know. But again, there's no indication that that's going to be the way it goes. So,
but I just push back and get a little version of it every day from a couple of my friends, but I just... that on it's all these players' fault, they're all greedy, there's no loyalty anymore. It's just, to me, a little bit hypocritical. Okay, there was a time where the coaches had all the power, they were leaving for the money, and we were okay with that system because why? Because you can control these guys a little better, right? You can control them. But these families have the right now. You know, you've been making money hand over fist off these guys' backs for years. And no, I'm not saying this system right now is right. You've got to get some guardrails. NCAA has no power,
yep.
and you don't even have a commish that can come in and enforce anything. So clearly we still have work to do. But there are also good stories. Like tell me, is Trinidad Chambliss not a great story
mm-hmm.
of a young man who gets an opportunity after Ferris, right, this Ferris State, to go make some money?
Absolutely.
He's not even thinking about going and right and starting for Ole Miss and winning a national championship. He's going to be a backup.
Yep.
And it was an opportunity for him to go make a little money,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's great for his family. And it's possibly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I don't know. He's been so good in these dang games, I think I might start seeing him on Sundays yep. in the NFL. We talked about that. But the point being, there are places where it's working, where these opportunities are good. You know, once you get them, and they're great for families and they're working out. But yes, man, we got to get the, we got to iron out these wrinkles, you know, these issues like this. And I don't know that until you're at some point where you've got a commissioner, like you said, yeah, you can try to enforce this stuff, take it to the court. Seemed like you were on your side, but getting it done, and what becomes in the immediate, it's really messy. But we were always going to get here.
Yeah.
Because we were always going this way in college sports.
That's
with
right.
Money continuing to go up, up, up.
That's right. Now, Memphis has not had a situation like this, so that's definitely good news there. But I do think, you know, in time, they will only become, you know, more and more frequent. No question about it. All right. Do we have official news on the Grizzlies front? They released the status report for tonight's game against the Suns. Jaren Jackson Jr. probable with an illness. It's going around, man. I don't know what the illness is, but he's probable with an illness. Santi Aldama questionable. Ja questionable. Vince Williams Jr. questionable. So, and then you have, you know, everybody else that was out is out.
I can live with that.
Cedric Coward included. So, I mean,
you'll have Ja back, so it won't be seven were out yesterday, I think. That makes
so
it six.
You think this means Ja's in?
To put him back as questionable after you downgraded him yesterday to doubtful would indicate to me the way they usually do things that he's back, because you've now upgraded him again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and typically, when they've been questionable, they play for the Grizzlies. Just talked about it.
Right. Right.
Why you could have easily just kept him doubtful, dude.
Is it meaningful at all that Vince Williams played and then is popping back up as questionable?
Well, Santi, same thing. Got the block last night. And you say he's on the list as questionable or one?
Yeah.
No, I mean, this team's banged up, dude.
Yeah.
Down, you know, barely got a guy out and barely got guys that put out there.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the team looks with Ja back in the lineup, because they're coming off of a huge win, you know. And if he comes back tonight and they lose, that's not going to be a great look.
They're underdogs.
Right, they're 5-point underdogs tonight. 6.5-point dogs last night. I'm just saying, like, let's if it gets, I don't think it would necessarily get ugly, but if it did, that would not be great. That would not be an ideal look, because they are 10-8 without Ja this year. I don't know exactly who that's all against, but, you know, your best win of the year came without Ja. There's no doubt about that. Spurs, definitely their best win.
Man, I said this past offseason that if this was going to work, with what they'd done after the Bane trade, that you would have to have an understanding of patience. I was looking Brad dead in the eyes. I remember the conversation. Patience between Ja and the Grizzlies, because this could take a while. And that's what I'm saying. If we're already here, 36 games in into a season, he said, well, I got to be out there. I got to play every game. He's missed 18 of them. And you've shown the in and out. Where's the patience? Where was the understanding that surely there had to be? You have Isolo. You have a new coach who you said you were all on board with. And you're already talking. We said it. What if this thing goes off the rails, is the way we put it, and Ja's asking for a trade? That's the way we put it. Last year, we in terms of dealing with this situation, we were talking about the coaching situation, everything else. What if you get here? You might be here. You know, you can't rule it out right now based on what we saw against the Lakers, the in and out, everything else. So my point would be, to go back to that, if Ja's ready, if the patience ain't there, and he's ready to get off board, well, it you know what's got to happen next. You don't need to look like a malcontent. That makes it harder to trade you. You don't need to look like somebody that's hard to deal with. You can get back on board, get back out there, listen to the question. Well, even if you're 1 foot out, like I've said, you've decided, no, this ain't for you. You've got to show, man, that you can get with a program enough to be out there and leading again. So, I hate that we're having this conversation. I wish he had, I continue to phrase it like, you know, rewritten the narrative, but we're so far in now and the narrative really has only gotten stronger. You got ESPN writing questions about, you know, writing stories about whether you got a negative trade value with Melo and Trey. Yeah. Get out there and play, man.
Yep.
If you're able to.
Yeah.
Even if you want to be gone. That's the best thing for both parties.
No, for sure. No, I mean, you got to be professional. That's the thing. Because, you know, I mean, I remember when Ja came in, one of the things that Ja really had going for him is he had great vets. He had Jay Crowder and those guys when he came in. And I think those guys were really good for him. So, and they were pros. I mean, they've been through it all. They knew what was up. You know, they've been traded. They've been dealt. They've been, you know, whatever. And I think that had a really good impact on Ja as a rookie. You got a lot of young guys on this team,
mm-hmm.
you know, so each one teach one. Be a positive influence. And again, I know you got your own stuff going on, and maybe you're not happy with certain things about the offense or the coach or the way that, you know, things have gone, whatever. But, you know, this is, you're an NBA basketball player at the end of the day. You know, there's no reason to be that upset about anything.
Frankly, when you've made, you know, the self-inflicted, the mistakes, the organization's been behind you.
Mm.
Like they've said, yeah, you got to do better, but they've been behind you every step of the way. Yeah, the more I think about what we touched on, I don't remember which segment it was, but if this is going to be Ja now, next year, kind of, yeah, I'm here, but I'm just here. You can't have him around these pieces that you've decided are part of the future.
Mm.
You know, at least with Jaren, while it feels like he's not, John, we've come in here and screamed about it, living up to the contract, I'm getting him every night. He's out there. For the most part, I'm getting a professional effort. I believe he's on board, right? I don't know about my year seven, franchise leader.
Right.
I don't know if he'll, maybe they do. Maybe they've had the conversations. Surely they have. And you feel better about it, but I don't know. And so I can't have that, back to the point, I'm influencing Cam. I can't have it influencing Cedric Coward. I can't have it influencing any of those guys because I'm trying to develop, I'm trying to build a new culture here with Isola.
Yep.
Everybody's got to be on the same page.
Yep.
I mean, you're doing more damage than you are good in the times that you're out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's
potentially. So show us you're on board.
Yeah.
And say it in your play, and you know what? Address it in the go ahead and address it in the locker room. May as well at this point because you got the whole league thinking that you're at 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Let's get to some sort of conclusion on this.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
I mean, the deadline is certainly approaching. And in the latest power rankings, ESPN has you at 22.
Well, I hate it because it's scary because you're talking about having to possibly for Atlanta attach a pick to Trey. It's gotten so bad there with that. Are you in the same boat with Ja? If we're talking about having to do this, do you have to now attach a pick because this dude played 18 of 36 this year in a year he's supposed to be out there all the time? Do you have to now attach something very valuable that you were looking at as something as part of your future to get him out?
Yep. No,
I don't want to do that. At one point, we thought you never would. Everybody offered you a fortune to get him.
Yep.
But are we here? It looks like that's where Atlanta is.
Yeah.
Are we close? Are we a few steps away?
I mean,
these are conversations folks going to start having to have if he ain't out there and joyful and helping, helping this lead this team tonight.
Yeah, because you have not just a deadline. In a trade deadline, but you also have a contract that you have to make a decision on too now.
Well, you did make some form of decision this offseason by not extending it.
And then you had every opportunity. And again, we talk about it. People believe they would.
The more I see, the smarter that's looking.
He's only got 2 years left on it, after this year.
No, the more I see, the smarter that's looking not doing the extension.
Right. He goes up to $42 million next year and then $44.8 million. In his final year in 27-28. So, I mean, either way you slice it, there's going to be some decisions that have to get made. And if you just look at, and again, I'm not trying to pile on Ja, but if you just look at that 2022 and on season, you got the suspension of 8 games for conduct detrimental to the league in March 23. Then, of course, they suspended him for 25 games. Because of the gun thing, we know that he ended up losing his entire 24 season with the injury. He's already been suspended once this year because of the Lakers second half. So it just kind of you look at his on spot track, you see all that. It just that's about when it flipped. That's about when it shifted. It was that 2022 year, and it just has not felt quite right since then. And coaching changes, hasn't really changed anything. So, again, I don't want to be naive about it. Like, I can be hopeful about it. I can be hopeful that he'll come back at some point. He'll play, the rest of the season, 80% of the rest of the season. He'll be happy. But I'm not going
to
be naive.
No, at some point, if he's not going to change and grow into that one, we have to change.
That's right.
More importantly, take we out and put the franchise.
Yeah.
You have to operate differently. You have to stop putting that. It's misplaced hope.
Because what I would tell you,
and is he not? And again, I'm a guy that roots for him. Is he not showing you that
for sure
now, year after year?
And this is the hard truth. This version of Ja Morant is not box office. What you're getting from Ja Morant as a whole in 2025-26 is no longer.
Braun. He tried to get Braun.
He did. He did. I mean, he has little flickers, little glimmers, but. As a whole.
No, your point is understood.
I can't keep holding on to this version of Ja Morant that doesn't exist in Memphis anymore. I have to meet him where he's at now. And I'm not going to get that guy back. I'm not going to get that young player that came in 2021 and said, I just want to be the best version of Ja Morant. I want to do everything I can for the Grizzlies. And I'm going to dunk over everybody. And I'm going to be out there. I'm not getting that version of Ja. Talked about this yesterday. I'm getting a resentful, brooding, mad at the world for no apparent reason, Ja Morant.
We gave you everything you wanted, big dog. You got the new coach. You stamped him in the offseason. You didn't have to do that. If you didn't want Isolo as coach, you could have said that. You got influence in this locker room and with this organization. At least you did. I don't know how much he's got now, but you still did back then. So it's not an easy discussion, man, because you love the player and you love what he once was and still can be at times. But I gotta take you for where you're at now, man. And we'll see if he plays tonight. But, you know, it just has not been this return to glory that we hoped it would be.
No, it's 19-7 in right. 18 games.
And he's shooting 20% from three.
Exactly.
I mean, like, I'm just like the more – because if you can't – if you can't make threes, which he can't, and you're not playing with reckless abandon, which he used to but doesn't anymore and shouldn't play with anymore, like, your effectiveness starts to become, you know, in question. You know, I mean, again, 19-7 is not a bad NBA player by any stretch of the imagination, but it ain't what we have seen from him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen him be, I mean, his playoff averages, like, we've seen him be absolutely brilliant. And I don't know if that's how I would describe him in 2026. So, anyway.
I would say, in many ways, he's making the decision for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he could have made this go a different route.
Career lows in field goal percentage, career lows from three. Career lows basically and in scoring, basically career highs in turnovers. You know, I mean, you're not getting 21, 22 job back ever again. It's gone. 27-7 on 50% shooting from three or from the field. That version of John Morant is gone and he's never coming back. Now, I wouldn't tell that to the other front offices. I would say this guy desperately needs a change of scenery. He's going to become the old Ja again with you, I promise. But yeah, man, just not a great deal. Hopefully he comes back, has 50 on the Suns. He did beat him in Phoenix. So, you know, that was one of the highlights this year.
Early in the year.
Yep. Hopefully he can channel that and do it again. All right, we'll come back. Dan Wilkin will join us on the other side. I know he's excited as a Hawks fan that they're getting off of Trey.
He should be. It's the right move.
So we'll talk to him about this. We'll probably get into a little bit of Ja if there's some parallels there, if he sees the same, you know, with the Grizzlies in terms of a star that, you know, maybe wouldn't command as much value, but it might be what's best for everybody. We'll get into all that and the college football playoff on the other side. J&J, 99.5 ESPN. ATLANTA. That's where Dan Wilkin resides, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. College football playoff kicks off again on Thursday, getting closer and closer, crowning a champ. But, Dan, I want to start with you. Happy New Year, by the way. How excited are you about the prospects of getting off of the Hawks, getting off of Trae Young?
I mean, I'm not that excited about it because I've certainly enjoyed watching Trae Young play for many, many years. And, you know, he certainly provided some incredible memories, the 2021 run to the Eastern Conference Finals and the All-Star appearances and all the big shots, but time moves on and he doesn't really fit with the group of players that they've got now, and it's just a younger team, and they sort of tried to do something this year with Kristaps Porzingis that, you know, just hasn't really worked. And it's been pretty clear that Jalen Johnson is their best player and that they need to sort of reorient the team around him. And Trae Young's due a lot of money. So, yeah, time to go. And I don't know how that's going to look when it's all said and done. But, look, they're not going to win an NBA championship with this team. So you got to consider options, right?
Yep, absolutely. What, if any, parallels do you see with the Grizzlies and Ja Morant and the Hawks with Trae Young?
Well, I think there's some similarities, but I think the big difference is the contractual situation, right? And Trae Young's got a player option after this year, which I think he'll pick up for like 50, you know, something around $50 million. Ja's contract is a lot longer, isn't it?
It's 2 years after this one. So it's only 1 year longer and it is less money.
Okay. Yeah, so
the difference of about $80 million. I mean, in 1 year, or
right,
$30 million.
That plays into it. That plays into it a little bit as well. But you know, I think the Grizzlies have had some other issues with injuries. And I just think, like, there's the big similarity to me between the two situations is that neither player is really as good as they were a few years ago. And, you know, and I don't really know exactly why that's happened in either case. And maybe it's, you know, Ja's obviously super athletic, you know, above the rim guard. And it just doesn't seem like he's maybe got that same, you know, bounce in his step. Maybe he plays a little more cautiously because of the injuries, but, you know, he doesn't have that sort of skill set where he can survive as an elite point guard if his athleticism is not at the peak of the peak in the NBA. Trae Young has never been an athletic, you know, super athletic guy, but if you look at just his trajectory over the last 2 years, the rim finishing has been concerning, the shot making, the floater game, like all the things that made him so dangerous as an offensive engine like 3-4 years ago have just declined enough, just enough that it brings in a lot of the negative stuff that doesn't, you know, maybe that isn't offset by the positive stuff the way it used to be. So when you get to that point with a player, I do think it's tough, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to plan around that because you just don't know when the fall off is going to come.
The you know, he's also your franchise leader, and you've got some pieces like Cedric Coward that if you've got a franchise leader that's in and out, you don't want him being that bad influence on. I mean, and that's the thing. You're in year seven with Ja, and you'd expect him at this point. But you know, to be out there and to be leading it himself, there's also the availability issue with Ja is different than Trae. I know Trae's had his issues this year. But the not being out there part of this, too, I wonder, walking in, we're sitting here, you know, asking ourselves the question whether it's look in the mirror time. You know, those stories about Trae suggested that Atlanta might have to attach a pick. You know, ESPN's done one. It actually included Ja. Do these guys have negative trade value to the point that Atlanta might have to attach a pick? Do you think we're possibly there with Ja? I never thought I'd be asking you this question because I always thought everybody would want Ja. That's changed. Do you think we're at a point where to move him because of everything you laid out? He shoots 20% from three-point range. He's not the same attack the basket guy he was. That we're in a situation where if the Grizzlies do decide it's time to move on, you're attaching a pick to move Ja?
Like, well, I think one of the problems. Yeah, one of the problems is point guard is just a position that, you know, you don't necessarily put the same value on that as other positions on the court. And because most teams have a point guard that they like. Now, there's a few outliers, and you can look at, say, like an Orlando, or, you know, there's a handful of teams at the bottom maybe that are trying to tank and get their point guard in the draft. But, like, I just don't know in the NBA, like right now as it is today, that you want to necessarily have a point guard who's making $50, $60, $70 million a year, you know, especially if they're on the smaller side. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing that a little bit maybe in Cleveland. I think we've seen that in a lot of places. Like, you're unless that guy is just playing at an all NBA level, it's a more replaceable position. And I, you know, the Hawks, just as an example, like when Trae Young doesn't play, they certainly have bad stretches offensively, but on balance, like the offense is passable.
Yep.
It's okay.
Yep.
Because they just get shots differently and different people score rather than one guy having the ball in his hands the whole time trying to set the pieces up on the chessboard. It's just a different way to play, but you can still score points while also getting a lot better defense because you don't have a sieve on the floor that you have to cover for. So, like, I just think all of these point guards, maybe the value on the trade market is just kind of stunningly low given how talented we think all these guys are.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case here. And I think the Grizzlies, maybe they won't be watching closely, but, you know, that informative is what I would call the Trae Young return. There's no question. But if you feel like it's better for you, you have to do it anyway, right? Like, damn the return. I mean, if it's philosophically the way you want to operate your basketball team, like, we think we're better without this player. I mean, does the return even matter at that point? You just have to do it, don't you?
Well, look at it this way. If Trae Young is traded this year, then Atlanta would essentially get, you know, a free agency slot or a trade slot going into next year worth, you know, $45 or $50 million.
Yep.
So that's a huge component, you know, assuming you're getting back an expiring contract. Like, there was talk about C.J. McCollum coming back from Washington, and he's expiring. So you're basically just trading, you're trading one contract year worth $48 or $50 million for a guy that, you know, is probably not going to re-sign at the number that you want to sign him at. And you're just replacing that with an expiring contract that's going to become money you can use to supplement the team in other ways. So I think when you look at it from that standpoint, in this NBA, like it or not, what your balance sheet looks like is kind of everything because of the tax implications and the aprons and the restrictions that you get to once you're over a certain threshold. It's really tough, and I think it just makes guys making, you know, $40, $50, $60 million a year, they have to really be worth it. And I'm not sure that was the mentality that people operated with when a lot of these contracts were signed.
Yeah.
College football. Ole Miss feels like the best story in college football. You consider all the factors. Lane, hottest coach on the carousel. He leaves them. They're advancing without him. The Trinidad Chamla story. I don't know. The question I want to ask you, Dan, are you enjoying? I know you got a job to do, and it's to cover this thing, but is it fun? Are you enjoying the way that this is unfolding for Ole Miss? And would you agree that it is the best story in college football this year?
Yeah, certainly, like, the last month, and even beyond that, when you think back to kind of what the level of panic was during the Lane Kiffin courtship with Ole Miss, and then to see exactly how that played out, and then for the team to be able to beat Georgia and play the way they did amidst all of the chaos and the staff shuttling back and forth, and even some of the, you could say, maybe underhanded tactics by Lane Kiffin to try to cause issues with what's going on in Oxford. Like, it's been pretty incredible. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and I certainly think they're playing a very good team that probably should win the game. But, you know, when you look at the way Trinidad Chambliss played in that game, and, you know, Kewon Lacy, like, it's been really impressive and, you know, fun to watch. And certainly, like, you think about all the bad stuff going on in college sports right now, and there's a ton of things to criticize. I think there's maybe a little bit of a purity to what's gone on there, just in terms of guys not mentally checking out, not looking for the exits, and saying, hey, we're going to finish the drill here. And they've done a great job of it.
Yeah, no, they absolutely have. In terms of, you know, this matchup with Miami, I mean, people were debating whether they even, you know, belong in the playoff. Would they get in? Was it going to be them or Notre Dame? And here they are. How does this matchup bode for the Hurricanes in this one against this? Oh, I guess there will be some staffers staying behind at Ole Miss, but how does this sort of matchup look for the Canes in this one, Dan?
Yeah, I think it's a close game, and certainly the odds reflect that. I probably give the edge to Miami just based on, you know, they've had less drama, which, as we said, Ole Miss has thrived amidst the drama, but maybe at some point that runs out. I think line of scrimmage, they're going to be able to win a lot of those battles. They're just very, very good on the offensive and defensive line. But at the same time, Ole Miss has explosive potential. And if they can get off to a fast start and get a couple touchdowns on the board early, Miami's certainly the kind of team that doesn't want to be playing from behind. Carson Beck has been shaky in some spots, and, you know, they're just not incredibly dynamic, but I do think they're very good and they're very physical. And if you watched what they were able to do to Ohio State, they really controlled that game, I think, from start to finish. And I think that says a lot about them that maybe people didn't quite accept, because they had a little stretch in the middle of the season where they lost a couple games, and, you know, they were in the middle of ACC play. But, you know, really since that loss to SMU, they've been pretty strong, and they've taken care of business, and I think they're you know, anything can happen, but they go into that game as a slight favorite and deservedly so.
Dan, if you were John's Raiders, I'm putting you in Tom Brady's shoes. He's the one who seems to be running everything over there. What do you need to know question-wise in terms of making your decision with this number one pick on a couple of guys that are about to play each other again in Mendoza and more? Or are there no questions? You've seen enough already, Tom Brady, that you know which one of these guys you want at number one.
Well, Tom Brady knows way more about quarterbacking than I ever will. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to make a good choice, and it doesn't mean that I would make a good choice. I don't know. I mean, Mendoza's been awesome this year. I also think that's a team that's kind of operating on all cylinders.
Yep.
And I'm not saying he hasn't contributed to that. Obviously, he has. They're way better with him this year than they were last year. But I just think they're an older team. They're an experienced team. They've had that continuity. I think he really came into a very advantageous situation. I think you've seen a real progression in the course of Dante Moore's career from a guy who, you know, came in at UCLA and was a little bit in over his head, and, you know, took the time, essentially took a redshirt year, developed, waited his turn, and has, I think, shown the kind of talent potential everybody thought he had way back in high school. It's all been there on the field this year. So, you know, I'm not sure there's a right or wrong answer, but there's going to definitely be a lot of people watching that game tomorrow night to, you know, recency bias being what it is, that may determine who gets to that number one pick.
Yeah, I'm willing to let that decide it.
If done, well, it's about the shine, yeah, if it's just a
yeah. I'm like you.
Trinidad Chambliss type performance.
Yeah. I mean, Jason's got Trinidad going in the top 15.
No, I don't have that, Dan, but I do think it's amazing.
Well, I did wonder, with all the talk about Trinidad Chambliss coming back to Ole Miss, if he gets the waiver, like, at what point does his name start to come up in some of those conversations, like, that he could be a top 15 NFL draft pick and skip college altogether? I'm interested in that, but it's not really something you hear much about.
Talking to Dan Wilkin, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. Obviously, the story in college football today is the future of Damon Williams Jr. and just what Washington's legal recourse is going to be on his contract that he signed. Again, this is allegedly amateur sports, so, you know, we'll keep pretending there. What, if anything, do you expect to come out of this for both Washington and Damon Williams Jr.?
Yeah, I don't really want to make any predictions about what's going to happen. Obviously, these agreements and contracts have been written and vetted by, you know, in this case, the legal team for the Big Ten. The Big Ten actually provides that standard form contract that he signed to all of their members. You know, and if you read the language, it does seem to me, and I'm not a lawyer, but it does seem to me that it's a breach of contract. Now, what does that actually amount to in terms of damages or in terms of I can't imagine that he's going to be forced to go back and play for Washington. I don't think that's really on the agenda here. So it's hard for me to predict, like, what's going to happen, but obviously there's going to have to be some sort of arbitration or negotiation about how to get him out of that contract and do it in a way that's punitive, so that, you know, this isn't the new normal, because obviously this would be even more disruptive than all the disruptions we've got right now.
Dan, I don't remember, but just on the whole, because there is that conversation out there, and Lord knows, with everybody saying this thing needs guardrails, does a commissioner help? Does college football need a commissioner? I'm curious to get your stance on whether there is a save with a guy that's overlooking all of this.
Well, I don't think any of these issues, or at least most of them, are not the kinds of things that you can just have one person strike a gavel down on a desk and say, all right, this is what I decide, and this is it. And it just doesn't get challenged. Like, it still goes back to the same problem of who vests that person with the authority to make those decisions? Well, it would have to be the schools. It would have to be the conferences, which I don't think they're going to do anyway. And then, you know, there's no union for the players to contest those things, and it just goes back to, I'm going to take you to court, right? And so I just, given the current structure, I don't think it would really matter. Now, maybe in a different structure you want a commissioner, but in this one, I don't really know what they would do.
Yeah, it is an absolutely, you know, hellacious, you know, world that we're living in. What would be the best champ? Who's the best champ in the college football playoff? I'm not asking you, like, who you're picking, but, like, who would be the most fun? Would it be Ole Miss? Indiana would be a blast to me.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana, look, I've been watching college football for a really long time, and Indiana is just one of those programs that has always been considered the dregs of the sport. You know, Indiana, you know, Vanderbilt. I mean, you can go down the line with just these perennial losers, and they all sort of went into this, you know, this group that you made fun of and you thought could never happen. You know, they were football schools. You look at a Kentucky, same category. You know, they win 10 games one year and everyone thinks it's a miracle, right? Indiana might win the national championship. They're the number one team in the country, and they were in that group 2 years ago. Like, if Indiana won the title, there's really nothing that I can think of that's like this, that's like that in sports. It's an unbelievable story and really just sort of a one of a kind moment that is on one hand completely unexpected and hard to imagine, but is also like very much a product of the era and all of the ways in which people now build teams that we didn't used to do before. So I think from all those angles, like, Indiana would be a very appropriate champion for this year.
Yep, absolutely. Dan, great stuff as always, man.
Thank you,
thanks
brother.
For the time.
You got it. Thanks.
Yep. He is Dan Wolkin, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. Appreciate him joining us today on the show. I do think when we move to the mornings, he's going to be joining us weekly.
Outstanding.
On Monday. So excited to add that. But he is going to the Olympics. He's going to, I think it's in Italy this year, the Winter Olympics. In 2000,
the ones we care about the most,
2026. Yeah, it's in Milan. How about that?
Thanks.
So everybody here's locked into the. We'll pretend to care about
we
it
have
when
to
it's
act
here.
Like we care once it
yeah.
starts, and we'll, and we'll watch the ice hockey.
Yeah,
I'll be into it.
We'll watch the hockey.
No, but it's not Winter Olympics are not relatable. That's the problem.
Lindsey Vonn is like 40-some-odd years old, and that's a huge story.
Well, she could fall down the hill.
That's fair.
And we've seen it.
She definitely could.
I wonder,
is she still out there?
She's coming back. This is a big comeback for her. Yeah.
Do we usually win the Winter Olympics?
I feel like we do. Yeah.
I feel like
let's go back and look at it.
Japan really was good
Winter
last
Winter Olympics results.
Am I making that up? That Japan was challenging?
Let's see. Norway.
Yeah, that's one of those. Okay, that makes sense, right?
We were third. Yeah, we were third.
Or bronzy.
Norway, Germany, and United States. I don't know how you guys do it. You guys want to go by medal count overall, or you go by golds?
Go by medal count.
We were third. We were also third and tied for third in golds. So
that sucks.
People don't grow up in America skiing.
Remember when like Herschel Walker made a run at the bobsled and like trained for it?
I do remember that.
That was before my time.
Yeah, man.
I remember Lolo Jones doing the bobsled thing.
Yeah, Lolo. Yeah, that was fun.
But you know, nobody snowboards anymore, you know. I mean,
yeah, we got Sean White is
curling.
Out. He retired.
I mean, it's just not a relatable Olympics to me. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, snowboarding was only going to be you that it was relatable to. Mm-hmm. There are just some of us that are not going to do anything.
Ice skating is the one everybody gets up for.
Used to.
I don't know if we still have the great ones there.
Back before Russia took over.
But we got, you know, the bobsleigh, the curls, the ice hockey, the luge.
So we're second all time behind Norway, according to the internet.
Yeah, I think it's like it's one of those things where like Norway, like you have to be the best in winter sports.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
It's like the United States not being the best in basketball or American football.
The internet also says that the extreme sports, like Jason said, the snowboarding and the freestyles, what got us really into the mix even more.
See, I thought that's where Japan really excelled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I obviously jumped the gun.
You
did. They were not one of the top three last year.
No, they were not. China was ahead of Japan.
Well, they got a lot more.
Some of these nations will, like, execute their players if they don't do well. Like, they train them all year, and they're, like, ridiculous.
I don't think that is
that's
true
what they're
for
doing to
Tyler
Loop.
You know, they like
Ravens kicker.
right. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
We can make a few that way.
I know that there are definitely some like South American soccer teams that would do that for sure.
Will we do better?
But yeah, like Norway is literally, isn't that the setting of Frozen? Isn't that where?
So
you have to, you have to be the best in winter sports because that's where the setting of Frozen is with Elsa. And
understood.
As you know, Olaf. Yeah. So
one of my favorite characters.
That's Norway. You got it.
Dan is, come on, man. I know Frozen, bro. That's all we watch.
In your bag. Yeah.
We've watched them all. We went to the Frozen live show at Disney. I mean, we did it all, man. All right. I know where the hell that's at. Got Kristoff, you know, Elsa, Anna, Olaf. You know, that's all I know. But,
pretty impressive.
But they'll be there in Norway
for you, man.
And in Italy for the.
Do you know if it's a boy or girl, number three, by the way?
We do not. We're going to find out when it comes out.
Can we do it on the show?
Sure. Like
maybe get a, you know?
It'll either have a penis or it won't.
I mean, it's your third.
It is my third.
I forgot to bring the beer.
Yeah, I was wondering about the beer. I had
he
planned
said
for
on, when he said on the show.
Yes. And
how did I forget? I'm getting old.
Well,
so I even brought the cup
actually.
So that for legal.
Dude,
like,
I'm
I
so
could,
sorry. And you know. you didn't say where is it or anything.
No, I didn't.
I will remember. Well, we're going to do this exercise.
Listen, David Boyd told me that I should bring the cups, too. So
was David Boyd there last night as well?
He was not.
Okay. So you filled
in for
David
Boyd. I mean, I was impersonating David Boyd, basically.
My wife, thought that Brad the entire time was another former boss of mine. She thought he was David Boyd the entire night.
But
Brad had been so gracious to come into Frasier.
No, I love Frasier.
To come watch. I mean, think about how far that is from Germantown. To come watch my son play New Hope play against Bellevue.
They're ballers, John. I'm sure you've seen them. I mean,
I'm like, you got to talk to my wife. I want my wife to know you're here. And she's like, David Boyd. It's like, honey, wrong one. Wrong boss.
All white people look alike.
You know, I would have done the same thing.
But Brad,
we're
so sorry as a family that she misidentified
you. Did you let her know?
Huh?
You let her know?
Yeah, I let her know as we were. She did it for probably the second or third time, apparently, because she'd done it in private conversation with him, I believe. And then in front of me at the end, we're walking.
She called you David to your.
She's like, have
your
a good night,
well,
David.
Well, it was all going well. And then she brought up ECS, which is where David obviously does some coaching over there, and his wife, I believe, works over there. Mm-hmm. And but I played the happy soldier. That's a tough moment, right? Because you either go in or you go
you
out.
Were very
and I think I tried to mute it out by going. Yeah, that you know that is a good place over there.
He deflected, instead of like
you know I don't like to hammer people. That's right. That some people. John would have gone probably. Yeah, you might be thinking of somebody else.
Oh, I would definitely have corrected it.
Yeah, I tried
so
to play in.
Believe me, I had to scold her all the way
enjoy,
to the car.
She's a terrific person. She's awesome.
That. We appreciate you coming out and taking time out of your day.
If you haven't seen the New Hope facilities, by the way, John.
Yeah, we got a new facility.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I have not seen the new facilities. I'll get to work on that.
Yep.
But the one thing I do I don't correct, but I probably should is when people misspell my name, they don't.
What do they do? J-O-N?
I used to misspell John.
That's a tough miss.
The H is incredibly important. Although it may be silent, it's incredibly important. You know, so people will, I see people misspell my name all the time, on social media. And it's like, that is not how you spell my name. And my name is also not Jonathan. It is
just
John.
John.
All right, so let's not add the.
It's straight people. I'm glad you got that off your chest.
You know, I
spell my damn name right.
I do like it's fine. Like I don't really correct people on Jonathan because I get why you know people would assume that that's my full name, but that is not my name. My name is just John.
And it's on the J&J show now.
It's the J&J show. So you know, get my name right, and stop leaving out the H, and don't add the uthen to it, bitch.
I mean, we have a couple minutes here. Anything else you need us to correct for the new year?
That's it.
Okay.
We're going to come back, wrap this up on a Wednesday. JJ, 90.9 FM, ESPN. Grizz Suns tonight on 90.9 FM, ESPN. John Morant, questionable. hopefully he can go tonight. We will certainly have all eyes on that. Obviously, got to thank Dan Wilkin for joining us on the show today from Yahoo Sports, as well as our man Norton Hurd IV,
of course,
who you can hear right here on 99 FM ESPN. But they're right outside the door, which means that's going to do it for us. Our time is up here on the J&J Show. Again, thanks to Dan Wilkin for joining us on the show. Thanks, of course, to Norton Hurd IV. For Jason, I'm John. We're gone.